Hello there, you're listening to the Park Rush Podcast. This is a theme park podcast. I'm Tom, and joining me, as ever, is...
Question mark?
Sorry, who are you again?
What is this? Did you say this was a theme park podcast? What?
We did talk about exactly what this was and what we were planning on doing before we started, but I've already kind of forgotten, so... Yeah, remind me what we're doing here and... Who you
You're
are.
Tom, I'm Josh.
I know who I am.
This is a podcast about theme parks and roller coasters and rides and stuff.
Oh, right. People actually listen to that kind of stuff?
Not that I've seen.
No. Yeah, no, that's partly why we disappeared for as long as we did. Yes. Hello there. Anyone really who still was subscribed to this podcast on their podcasting platform of choice, I guess theoretically we may well have, you know, we should have ended up on your feed again. So, hi.
Hello.
Thanks for not, you know, unsubscribing, I guess. There was no sort of great conspiracy, really. We kind of forgot to do it.
Yeah.
The first week of 2024. And then we sort of realised we'd forgotten, and then we sort of left it again. And then we just kind of got into the habit of not doing it just as easily as we'd got into the habit of doing it. And there we are. No podcast. Also been keeping pretty busy, Josh. I don't know about you, but, you know, new job. I've almost bought a flat. Had a few mental health breakdowns. I'll be keeping myself pretty occupied. I don't know about you.
Same job, same living situation.
But no breakdowns.
No breakdowns, no. Yeah, my car's still running pretty smooth, so all good in that department.
Nice.
Can't really go wrong. Couple of footballing injuries, but I'll be all right.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, physically in some ways, I've probably never been better. It's just mentally I am... have been completely and utterly screwed up. But, you know, talk to people, everyone. Therapy's good, gym's good, running's good. Or running would be good if, I don't know, spring decided to appear at any point here in the UK. It's been... It feels like the longest winter in history.
Yeah.
It just hasn't actually finished yet.
It's definitely not theme park weather still.
No, absolutely not. I tell you, though, Josh, where it is theme park weather, perhaps all year round... And what has reinvigorated me into trying to do a podcast again, I've been, and yeah, hold your breath, because you might not believe it, I've been in Florida.
What?
I know, right?
Can't believe it.
Very off-brand. And yeah, had just over a week in sunny Florida. Just Universal, really, and my first ever solo trip to Florida, it should be noted, but yeah, an unexpected demand, I would describe it as, by my boss at work to take some leave because I had loads to use, which was news to me. Fancy taking a trip somewhere before, you know, the house buying stuff, like, really moves along. And just kind of fancied somewhere that wouldn't really require all that much planning, given that it was really on a whim, and managed to fly myself out there and, in combination with the hotel for, you know, an unexpectedly relatively low price. And, yeah, got myself a Universal ticket and slummed it around the parks for 8 days, which was very nice. So that, yeah, reinvigorated me to do this. Josh, you don't even want to be here. You're just humouring me, I think.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I was shocked. Shocked, I tell you, when you were like, I want to do the podcast again. I was like, wait, what? Are you serious?
Well, you know.
Here we are.
Here we are, yeah. And I'm sure, you know, people will be delighted that we're back. I mean, a few people did ask where we were while we were away, I think. Friend of the show, John, I think, inquired at one point. I think friend of the show, Charlie, inquired at one point. And there was actually some bloke on Instagram who sat unread in our message requests for about 3 months asking where we'd gone. We never saw it because, yeah, it was in this message request box that I didn't even know existed. So sorry to that guy. The message then disappeared before I had a chance to reply. So if you're listening, thanks very much. It would have been nice to hear you or hear from you when we actually did the podcast, Josh, you know. Don't you think?
Calling him out.
Well, I am calling him out, you know. You want to? If you enjoy the podcast, let us know about it. You know, we went away thinking, like, no one listens to this poxy thing, do they? Doesn't seem like it. And then they come crawling out of the woodwork, wondering where we've gone. But yeah, came back feeling pretty refreshed and, you know, feeling kind of up for talking about theme parks again, I guess. Was there, as I say, for about 8 days and, enjoyed myself so much. I now technically am a Universal annual pass holder of sorts, which I haven't been since I was a wee lad when you used to just be able to buy them here in the UK. You used to just be able to buy annual Universal. Yeah. Did you ever do that? Were you ever going to Florida, you know, regularly enough to have annual passes for any of the parks when you were a kid?
No. That would never make any sense. It's a once in a lifetime holiday, Tom.
Yeah, sorry. Of course it is. Yes. Yeah, you used to be able to buy them, and obviously when we were sort of in a rhythm of going every August, it made going to Universal a lot cheaper, buying 4 annual passes. But then they stopped letting you do it here in the UK. And I think my understanding is you still can't, but you can now upgrade. Maybe you've been able to do this for a while, or maybe you've always been able to do this, but my 2-week Universal ticket, which I bought in advance, which is probably a lot of British tourists' preferred way of booking Universal, I was able to just basically upgrade on my way out to technically a seasonal pass. So it's an annual pass, but with a fairly decent number of block out dates, so I can't go back at Christmas and New Year and Easter and things like that. Not that I would suggest anyone want to do that, because it's complete and utter chaos. But yeah, that cost me $25 to upgrade, so it sort of felt like, well, even if I don't go back, it's only $25, and if I do go back and I haven't done this, I'll feel like an absolute mug. So, and I got a little physical card, Josh, which is a nice throwback to the time. To a time when theme parks gave you physical tickets. Remember that?
Oh, what a time. What a season.
Yeah, so that's nice. That's nice. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure if it was worth doing kind of full-on trip reports. Maybe our, you know, half a dozen, if that, listeners can let us know when this goes up if you'd be interested in updated trip reports, because we did have Universal and Islands trip reports maybe in November or something like that. I mean, they were based on the family trip I had there in October. So there's not really that much new to say, or really there's not really anything new to say. Perhaps there were new things to me, like I did try and dedicate a lot of time to stuff that I haven't done before. I mean, a lot of that was on the kind of the food and drink front. Obviously, there aren't really any new attractions at these parks since last year. There are some very much on the horizon, like the DreamWorks Land at Universal, for example. But yeah, not a huge amount new to talk about, but do let us know if you'd be interested in trip reports. Now, I did also do Volcano Bay for the first time, which I'm not sure if we've ever done a trip report on Volcano Bay.
God, if we have, it would be from my trip back in 2019.
Oh, a different world. I mean, they haven't opened any new slides there, right? Like the opening day Volcano Bay is still the Volcano Bay that we know now.
Yes,
it might be fun to do a trip report on Volcano Bay in that instance then, if we haven't done one for 5 years. But to be honest with you, my main two takeaways from Volcano Bay, like if you ask me a year from now what I remember of my day there, it would be the pulled pork sandwich, which was outstanding. Certainly by theme park standards, it was a fantastic lunchtime treat. And then also an existential crisis that I had while in the park. And something you were able to relate to, Josh, actually. I mean, I texted you very shortly after I did one of the body slides at Volcano yeah. Bay. I'm just going to try and pull up the exact name of it, but it's one of those trapdoor slides where you get in position at the top in the tube, in this enclosed tube, a door that kind of slides in front of you, almost like something out of Star Wars, like you're going into an escape pod or something. And then after some build-up, you know, there's sort of some chanting going on and some foreboding music, the floor literally opens up from underneath you and you just fall out into this very twisty, turny, intense slide. But yeah, you had done that one as well, right, Josh? Like, just while I look up exactly what it was called.
Yes, so there's two there. I've done both of them. One of them is a straight near vertical drop all the way down, and then it just comes out at the bottom. And then this one, like you say, very twisty turny. It's all over the place, it feels like. I had to take a few minutes afterwards to contemplate where my life was after that.
Yeah, I was very much the same. So there's the Kokiri body plunge, which is the one I think you're referring to that just dumps you out into a pool at the bottom. You fall for 125 feet on that one, and then you've got quite a long drop. Like, the gap between the slide and the pool, it's like a decent...
No, that's a different...
Oh, is that a different thing?
That's a different ride.
Well, how many of these are there?
There's a big drop. No, so there's only two where it's a trapdoor.
Right.
The ones that drop you from like a height above the pool are your more conventional slides.
Oh, okay. Yes. So those are the Oh Yeah and Oh No drop slides. Then you've got the Kokiri body plunge, and the two. Yeah, I guess the two, it's like a pair of slides that do the same thing that we are talking about, having given us existential crises of sorts, are the Kala and Tai Nui serpentine body slides. This was absolutely terrifying. I can't remember the last time I was genuinely quite so fearful on a theme park ride of any description. I really did fear for my life. I feel like my heart rate went through the roof. I don't feel like I was breathing while I was on this slide. I swore at just a ridiculous rate of knots, and every time I swore I got a mouthful of water. And then when you come out into like the runoff, you also get a massive face of water. And I did wonder if that was it for me when I was sort of halfway down that slide. I thought maybe this is the end. Thank goodness.
Yes, thank goodness. Thank God you're still alive, Tom, and you're still here with us.
But yeah, it would be fun to talk in more detail about Volcano Bay and my time there. I think otherwise my main takeaways from the other two parks would be that VelociCoaster, Josh, might actually be my favourite ride now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's very, very good.
Wow.
I think the day that really consolidated it for me was one where I got to Islands for rope drop and left well after the park had officially closed. And I started and ended the day with VelociCoaster. So I did it first thing and last thing.
Okay.
And it's just phenomenal. And I think the thing that really kind of made me think, oh, this might actually be my favorite now. I don't know if I hadn't done this before or if I'd just been a bit more conservative about it, but I had my arms up in the air like the whole time, the first time I did it. And the kind of lack of security you feel when you do that on this particular ride, because if people don't know, it's basically just a lap bar. I mean, it's quite an unusual restraint system compared to some other roller coasters you might have done, because it does come down from over your head, but ultimately you are only held in at the lap. So it's not like there's a shoulder restraint or anything like that. And so if you're not holding on to that thing, it doesn't feel like there's much really to hold you in. And so if you know, put your arms up in the air and wave them like you just don't care, the moments where this coaster does go upside down, it really does feel like you could just fall out of it. And nowhere is that more apparent than when you do the Mosasaur roll, which is where it effectively does a corkscrew type maneuver very low over the central lagoon of Islands of Adventure. You know, it feels like if an NBA basketball player went on there, he could probably sort of drag his fingers through the water and make a nice ripple effect. Like, it feels like you get really close. But yeah, that's a hell of a ride. And I enjoyed it a lot when I did it first thing in the morning. But then doing it at night time was an absolute treat. Like, in the dark, you can't really see where you're going. Like, if you're watching the ride in the dark, it's kind of, the coaster train is lit up on the sides, so you can kind of see it almost from wherever you are in the park. You look towards Velocicoaster at night and you're going to be able to see the lit up coaster train making its way along the track, which is a really cool visual. But obviously you can't see those lights when you're actually on the ride, and it's not like it's got headlamps or something. So especially the first section of the ride where you're kind of going amongst you know, the rock work and the foliage, and kind of feel like you're almost down in a trench and going through a couple of tunnels, you can't really see anything. So that made it in some ways all the more invigorating and exciting. And it's not until you zoom up into the Top Hat maneuver and can then look out across the whole park again and see, you know, Hulk and Doctor Doom and everything else lit up in the distance, that you kind of get a sense again of where exactly you are. But yeah, that is a damn good ride. And as I say, that might now be my favourite at either of those two parks. And it pains me that you still haven't had a chance to do it, Josh.
Yeah, I haven't done that. I haven't done Hagrid. Yeah, it's tough, you know.
It's a tough life.
Not all of us can get to Universal just on a whim, you know.
You know, you just have to prioritise things in life, Josh, I guess. You know, do as I do. Sell your car. You don't need it. Velocicoaster's way faster than your car will be going most of the time. No?
Well,
maybe I'm talking to the wrong person about that.
Yeah.
It certainly goes faster than I ever used to go in my car, but maybe not for yourself.
Day to day, I'm doing that on a regular basis because I'm on the motorway every day to get to work.
True. So. You're not going upside down at that point in time, though.
Hopefully not. If I am, I've done something wrong.
But yeah, that was probably the main takeaway for me. And then in terms of like the firsts on the food and drink front that I sort of alluded to, I had my first Harry Potter breakfast, Josh. I kind of had what kind of got a sense of, right, what's a traditional English breakfast as so far as these Americans are concerned. And to be fair, it basically felt like they nailed it and then completely lost their head at the end. Like, no, we must add something unnecessary to this plate, you know, because you had your eggs, you had your sausages and your bacon, and it was like, I mean, it wasn't the best quality bacon I've ever had, but it wasn't like that, like, super crispy streaky bacon that you'd get in a Denny's, for example. It was like a proper rasher, you know, that you'd be more accustomed to having in your Greg's breakfast roll.
Back bacon.
Yeah. Your grilled tomato, your baked beans, your black pudding even. A croissant, however.
On an English breakfast? What on earth is going on? This is ridiculous. That is very specifically from a continental breakfast.
Yeah, I know.
Get it off. Brexit means Brexit, and that means breakfast, frankly. Not happy.
Yeah, so I had my breakfast in the Leaky Cauldron, which is in the Diagon Alley part of the Wizarding World. They do, if not exactly the same, very similar breakfasts in the Three Broomsticks, I think it is, in Dicks. Hogsmeade. Yes. And a continental breakfast is one of the options where, yeah, by all means, give me a croissant and some jams. And an American breakfast is also an option where you get, like, pancakes. But the traditional English, like I said, they almost nailed it and then they just lost their heads and threw a croissant on the plate. I don't recall seeing croissant on the menu, like on the description of the dish. So I do wonder if they just chuck one on there because they had a few going. But I tell you what the best thing about this
Fleur Delacour was over and...
Let's not talk about Fleurs, Josh. I'll tell you what, though, Josh. The best thing about getting the breakfast was that you get a drink of choice thrown in. So this cost me 18... I think it was $18.99, which sounds like a lot for a full breakfast. I mean, spoiler alert, it is. You're in a theme park. But... it comes with a drink, as I say, and butterbeer is one of the options. And hot butterbeer.
It's like a Wetherspoons.
It's like a Spoons, yeah. Hot butterbeer is an option, Josh, and I'd never had hot butterbeer before. I think it's relatively new. So I was quite excited to try that. Whilst I will, you know, we hold the croissant thing against them, the one thing you got to love America for at a time like this is... You know, I said, when they said, what drink do you want? I said, oh, I'll have a butterbeer, please, hot butterbeer, please. And she said, with almost like a concerned look on her face, like, oh, you do know that it's only a small one that you get with your breakfast. You know, it's not. I was like, yeah, that's fine. Of course, a small in America is really a regular over here. So I got more than enough hot butterbeer, quite frankly. And Josh, I think it's my favourite form of butterbeer. I think it's better than frozen. Good.
Wow.
It's good stuff.
Wow. Another thing I haven't partaken in is butterbeer. I just don't... The queues have always seemed quite long when I've looked at places, when I've, you know, wandered past places that are serving butterbeer. I'm like, I don't care enough.
Right, yeah. I mean, I probably wouldn't want to have it out in the hot Florida sunshine. I mean, probably wouldn't want to have any sort of hot drink out in the hot Florida sunshine, to be honest. But... In a very well air conditioned leaky cauldron, went down a treat. I mean, it's very sweet. You won't be surprised to hear, but it does have the same sort of butterbeer flavour as the other one. So it's a bit sort of shortbready, maybe. If I had to compare it to something, almost somewhere between like shortbread and what are those Dutch waffles called? Are they stroopwafels or something?
A stroopwaffle.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere between those for me. And yeah, as a hot beverage. I think it kind of worked. Put it this way, like, if it was a hot day out, there are a million cold drinks I would choose over a normal butterbeer or a frozen butterbeer. Like, whenever I've had one in the past, it's very much been like, well, when in Rome, but
yeah.
I don't know, let's say Starbucks or someone did a deal, started doing butterbeers over here. A cold winter's day, like in late April, I would quite happily order a hot butterbeer, you know, as a warm me up kind of hearty beverage. I wouldn't want to see the calorie information. I'll make that clear, but
no,
otherwise, yeah. It'd be a good option, I think.
Fair enough. Yeah, can't argue against it.
No, yeah.
I kind of want to see them as street sellers on the corners of. You know, London. I think that'd be good.
Yeah, that would be good. I've not really looked into this properly because it's true, isn't it, that you can get butterbeer at some of the other Potter things around, including the studio tour here in the UK. Is it the same recipe, do we know, or is it different?
Yeah, I guess I don't know. Is it officially licensed or, like... Have they licensed the recipe from Universal, or is it...
I don't know.
Have they come up with their own concoction?
I've no idea.
Because some people say that Disney has a drink that is also very similar to butterbeer that they serve. I think they serve it back in, like, Gaston's Tavern, maybe.
Right. Interesting.
And it was they're trying to make their own butterbeer to sell in the parks.
Mm.
But, yeah.
I also had actual beer in from the Hog's Head. This was in Hogsmeade. There are some.
Took your ID with you then.
Specific brews. Yes, had my ID with me. Quite refreshing. I hadn't been ID'd for a while. I was starting to get a bit worried about whether I was showing signs of age. And then, you know, I got ID'd every time I wanted to drink in Florida. And then got back, went to an Arsenal match, and was asked by the stewards if. How old I was before they searched me. So all is well again. Turns out I do still look 15, so that's good.
Oh, that is promising.
Yeah. So had some Potter sweets as well. Had a, what did I have? I had a butterbeer caramel, and I had a
nice
a cauldron cake, which
lovely.
I couldn't quite believe this. Apparently, when they first came out in like 2010, when Hogsmeade first opened at Islands of Adventure, a cauldron cake was like $4 or something. Maybe not even that. Since then, not only have they changed the recipe, and according to friend of the show John Self, renowned theme park food blogger, most people, it seems, or so, he does anyway, and John has strong opinions about theme park food, and so very much made it seem as though anyone who's anyone preferred the original cauldron cake compared to what they serve you up now.
Yeah,
it was, and it's $14 for a nice cake, but it's not that big. I mean, look, I'd suggest most people share it, but it's not because it's big. It's because it is one of the sweetest things I've ever put in my mouth. and no,
that's what she said.
No one human should probably consume that much sugar in one go. It's a sort of chocolatey cake, very sweet, inside a, as the name would suggest, a little kind of cauldron sort of mould, really. And then... Yeah. Loads of icing on top, done up to look like a little flame. And I mean, part of the gimmick is that once you've finished your cauldron cake, you are supposed to keep the cauldron, and then you can,
of course,
I haven't tried this yet, but I did bring it back, so I will give it a go. You can then you can bake your own cake in this cauldron mold. So
right.
I'll give that a go at some point. Pour some cake mix in there, see what happens. Magic, presumably.
Yeah, it should be easy enough, right? Sure, it just instantly, just like that, worked perfectly.
Yeah. Gosh, and I also had Harry Potter fish and chips. I joined my family's traditional fish and chip Friday in spirit by having fish and chips at the Leaky Cauldron. Josh, I'll tell you what's even more outrageous than throwing a croissant on an English breakfast.
Go on.
Fish and chips, but they're wedges.
What?
Which is just bizarre, right?
You can't be doing that to me.
Like, if they'd been fries, I would have thought, well, this isn't really authentic, but I get it. You know, we're in the US, we're in a theme park. Of course it's going to be fries. It's almost as if they sort of said to themselves, well, it can't be fries. You know, we know fries aren't going to do here. So having gone through that thought process, why would you then serve up wedges?
Surely you have potatoes, just like steak chips. Just serve steak chips.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, you know.
So that was quite disappointing. Well, more distressing than disappointing, to be honest. I mean, the fish was okay. Yeah. It was, you know, very, very well battered pieces of cod. but yeah, the whole wedges fiasco I struggled with, I've got to say.
It's outrageous.
Yeah. I had some different donuts at Voodoo that I hadn't had before. Had a different rice bowl at Thunder Falls Terrace. People might remember me talking about the vegan one I would have had last year. Well, one of the things that's happened in the last 4 months is that I've started eating meat again. So I had the Pernil rice bowl, which is basically, I mean, it's close to somewhere in between like pulled pork and pork shoulder. I even had a bit of crackling. But anyway, that was maybe the nicest thing I ate on theme park property while I was away. It was very, very nice. And it was a very, very hearty portion for $16, I think it was. There's a picture of it on the Park Rush Podcast Instagram page. And I warn you, it might make you hungry. It was very nice. And as I said, it was a good portion. Ate in the NBC grill, watched Arsenal in there. And I'm trying to think what else.
Did they win?
Mel's, I went to Mel's, which I'm told has a new menu, which is better than the old one, but I thought was still pretty underwhelming. I had a vegan hot dog there, and vegan chili dog, actually. That wasn't amazing.
Where's that, Tom?
Mel's in Universal.
Yeah. Where is it, in the City Walk?
Oh, no. No, this is the American Graffiti Diner that's, you know, near the Hollywood Boulevard, you know, just across from the horror makeup show with all the cars outside.
Yeah. Yes, okay.
I think this is in every Universal. I mean, it was in... So I'd eaten in Singapore Mel's before, some years ago, but I'd never been in Florida Mel's. So I went in there. And I also had a couple of the current varieties of crepe from Central Park Crepes, which...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I had their savoury option, which was all sorts of meat, with some, you know, lettuce and tomatoes and a nice, almost a Big Mac style sauce, and then some little potato chips, almost like, you know, French fry crisps, you know, remember those?
Yeah.
Kind of like those, kind of sprinkled on top. But yeah, I think there was beef, pork and ham in there, and maybe something else. But that was, yeah, that was really nice. The other one I had was just too much. So this was a vegan one, and it was cookie batter. Blimmin' heck. I mean, this was the first thing I ate. So just for context, I arrived, I touched down in Orlando at about 4:05, I think it was. And then I was inside Universal before 5. It was quite an astonishing turnaround. Like, I didn't have any checked baggage with me, so... I've just realised how aimless this podcast seems. Welcome back, everyone. It's the Park Rush podcast. But when I touched down in Orlando, I was at Terminal C, which was new for us when we went last year. Obviously, this time around, I was more familiar with it. Our issue with it last year was that you had to collect your checked bags before you could then go through passport control. So... you could get off the plane in what you think was really good time. But then, you know, if you're unlucky and your bags come out right towards the end and you stood around waiting for ages, that delays everything, right? Because then by the time you've got your bags, yeah, you might also then be facing a long queue for passport control, etc. And then, you know, in our case last year, we had to go and sort the car out and stuff as well. For me, though, it worked brilliantly because I had no checked bags. I could go straight to passport control, and because the vast majority of people on my flight were waiting for checked bags, I walked straight through, no issue, and that is why I was able to get to my hotel so quickly. I was staying at the DoubleTree by Hilton near Universal Studios. I think that's literally what it's called if you look it up on Google. I did do a little video on our YouTube channel to show how easy it is to get from that hotel to the Universal Parks. It's not a Universal hotel, but it is a partner hotel. So they put on a shuttle bus. There is like a Universal help desk in the main lobby of the hotel. And yeah, I would happily stay there again. It was good. One thing not to do though, Josh, top tip. Don't get a cab from the airport.
Right. Okay, interesting. What would you recommend instead?
Well, get an Uber. Don't get in a cab that is waiting at the airport already, because that was the most I spent on anything while I was there, was that cab. And wow, it was frankly outrageous. I mean, it was kind of like the black cab of Orlando. That's kind of how it felt, you know? Like, you get in a black cab in London, they take you around the corner and they turn around and be like, that'll be £89, please, mate. And it's like, mate, we've driven 8 yards. That's basically what this felt like. I was like, well, this is probably going to be more than what I would expect to pay for an Uber. Of course it will be. But, you know, it's right there. I'm not averse to it. Let's go. And, you know, I was sort of enjoying looking out the window at the beautiful sunshine and blue skies, looking forward to getting to my hotel, texting the family, saying how quickly I'd got through security and everything. And I was going to have time to go to the parks. And then, you know, I glanced over at the little ticker telling me how much the fare was. And then I sort of had to do about a double take and then a triple take. And then, honestly, I couldn't believe it. It was madness. It cost me about, including a tip, because, you never know in Florida, do you? Like, if you don't give a tip, you might turn around with a handgun. So with a tip, it was $80 to drive. I don't know, what was it, like 19-minute drive or something?
Wow.
Yeah. Absolutely unbelievable. Anyway, where were we? The crepe. Yeah. So the crepe, this cookie batter crepe was the first thing I ate on property because, so, you know, I'd had breakfast at the airport, then I'd been fed on the plane. And, you know, by this point, it would have been like midnight UK time, But I didn't want to, you know, I've got one more meal left in me. You know, I don't, and I can justify it being something of a dessert because, you know, all you get on the plane is like a little chocolate mousse or something, don't you? Which is, it's not a proper dessert. You've got to indulge.
The dessert on the plane is basically the only thing that I eat, so.
That's the only thing I ate on the way back, yeah. The main dish was so appalling that all I ended up eating was, in fact, yes, a chocolate mousse and some crackers. But yeah, this cookie batter, I apologise, by the way, it's actually cookie butter is the name of this crepe. So on the board of Central Park Crepes, it describes it as whipped vegan cream cheese, cookie butter, vegan whipped cream, and crunchy cookie. So first bite, Josh, I was thinking, holy smokes, this is one of the nicest things I've ever had in my life. Promptly turned into like the kid from Matilda who's got to eat the chocolate cake, sort of wolfed down bites 2, 3, 4, thinking, oh, this is incredible. I'm so happy to be back. Marilyn Monroe's performing over there. I'm sitting outside Mel's in the hot Florida sunshine, eating this incredible crepe. And then all of a sudden it sort of hits me, this, I guess, combination of like sugar rush and belly ache. And I know this sounds bizarre, but I was so overcome that I almost felt drunk somehow. Like, I've never felt drunk from eating before, but I kind of felt a bit drunk from eating this crepe. Like, it was so sweet and overwhelming.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I felt really rough. And I didn't think I'd be able to finish it. I mean, having paid $12 for it, I thought, well, I'm not throwing this away, but I sort of got halfway through it, probably too quickly, to be honest. That probably didn't help. But then I ate the second half kind of over the course of about 50 minutes as I sort of trudged around feeling sorry for myself. Yeah, it felt like some sort of masochist exercise, you know, like, this thing's making me feel sick, but I must finish it.
That does sound pretty good, to be fair. I think I could certainly smash one of those.
I haven't had anything that I have not liked from that Central Park crepe stand over the last couple of visits. For people that don't know, they only ever have like three options on the menu normally, and they're divided between savoury and sweet, and at least one of them will be vegan. And they're all made fresh, you know, in front of you, made to order. There aren't any that are just sitting around waiting for someone to order them. You order and then they make it. So, you know, if it gets busy, you can sometimes be waiting a while. But on both occasions that I went on this trip, it was, you know, I was served pretty quickly. And just as I've got the board up in front of me, the picture, just to confirm that savoury one I mentioned, the chopped tripletta, it was called, and that was roasted pork, smoked ham, grilled beef, lettuce, tomato, Swiss cheese, potato sticks, and mayo ketchup.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was very good. And then the other one they had was one I'd had before, which is why I didn't have it, the strawberry hazelnut, which was strawberries, Nutella, mascarpone, Nutella, whipped cream and powdered sugar. So there you go.
There you go.
So in terms of like new stuff, that was kind of it really. I'm trying to think if there were any other main takeaways, to be honest. My Men in Black average score, Josh, has gone through the roof. I tell you, like, I'm just getting about... You've probably beaten this kind of score, but I was just getting like 450,000 by default. That was just the base score that I was getting over the course of
that gym work.
My trip. I wasn't even using the gun. I just climbed out of the thing and started punching the aliens. That's how I got such a good score. I didn't think I was ready to love again, but on my last ride on Men in Black, there was some lady next to me who got like 800,000 points.
Yeah. Wow.
And I was like, bloody hell. That's a good score. Marry me. Anything else going on? Oh, I can confirm, Josh. I think one of the last things we might have talked about when we still did this podcast on the regular was the new track list on the Rip Ride Rocket.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you reckon that Sandstorm by Darude was a good addition.
Yeah, I do, 100%.
Yeah, you're correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vindication.
Yeah, I mean, there are now only 5 songs on there instead of however many there were before. There must have been, what, 20, 25, something like that? Because it used to be like five songs per genre or something, and there were like four or five genres. Now it's one song per genre. So, yeah, not many songs on there. I mean, there are some reports, aren't there, that this scene might not be long for this world. I think Alicia Stoner over at Parkstop has kind of been teasing that it might be replaced by something Fast and the Furious, possibly that Fast and the Furious roller coaster that they're making or building in Hollywood. Perhaps they will copy and paste for Florida. I guess we'll see.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, did all the water rides. E.T. got my name right. Saw the backside of Spider-Man, like the extended queue. I'd never seen that before, but because the queue was long, but because the front was covered by work walls. I think they must just be doing something with the pavement out front. But it meant you didn't go in through the front of the Daily Bugle. You went out the back, and there's quite a lot going on there actually in terms of like theming. There's like a big old statue of J. Jonah Jameson and stuff like that. As I said, I'd never seen any of it, so that was kind of neat.
He erected a statue to himself.
Monument to himself. Yeah, unlike him really. Hagrid still excellent. I got the impression that the Forbidden Journey was in slightly better shape than it was when I went on it last year. I think last year when I did it, some of the audio was about out of sync. Some of the screens were looking a bit grimy. I think some of the Dementors weren't working. All of it in much better shape this time, although it wasn't the same without my sister's flawless Hermione impression ringing in my ears.
Yeah. Better than Hermione herself.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we could get trip reports out of these, because I wouldn't mind talking in a bit more detail about some of this stuff. Two more things I will mention for now. There's some very nice 25th anniversary Islands of Adventure merch that has started to come out while I was there. Controversial one now, Josh, perhaps.
Here we go.
Fast and Furious Supercharged is not the worst ride at these parks anymore, to me.
Well, it's hang not on. The worst. Okay.
Yeah.
But I feel like the ride that you're going to say is the worst is basically just a reskinned version of Fast and the Furious.
Yes, you have guessed correctly. But what I will say is that kind of that extra va-va-voom that this other ride had, you know, this
va-va-vroom.
Yeah, va-va-vroom, and you know, this little bit of magic pixie dust, to use a more Disney analogy, they've got rid of it, Josh. I am, of course, talking about Kong Skull Island, or is that the full name of the ride? Is it Escape from Skull Island or Return to Skull? I can't remember. Anyway,
Kong Skull Island. You're on a bus and you're looking at some screens.
Right. Yeah. Something like that.
I think that's the full title, yeah.
So, yeah, as you rightly say, it was basically the same ride as Fast and the Furious. You're on a truck. There are screens either side of you. It creates the illusion of movement and changes in speed. As you hurtle through these scenes, except in the Fast and the Furious, you're involved in a highway car chase. And in King Kong, you're driving through the jungle being chased by velociraptors. What set Kong apart was that when you first got on the... Well, there were a few things, weren't there? So you had the... every truck was meant to have its own unique driver. There was like an animatronic driver in the front of the truck who would move around and had like bespoke dialogue. I mean, if you want to go back further, of course, the queue for Kong was always very impressive. There was some very good animatronics in there, good atmosphere. When it first opened for a while, they had scare actors. A bit like the Mummy ride used to have, and made it feel a bit like a sort of miniature Halloween Horror Nights attraction in some ways.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, back onto the ride proper, you had the animatronic driver. The truck also went outside initially, and you had some... I always thought that set a really good mood for the ride, and it would change, wouldn't it, based on kind of what the weather was like. Like, you know, if you had a slightly more overcast, rainy day, which doesn't come around often, but when it did... It would add quite a lot, I thought, to kind of the mood and the atmosphere of the ride. And then, you know, you'd have, there were like fire lanterns out there and some nice foliage and some impressive rock work. And then you'd, of course, go through these big wooden gates bit Jurassic Park style into these caves, more animatronics going on, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, when you did hit the screens, it was at least in 3D. There was some decent, you know, depth to the scenes. And this was never the case on Fast and the Furious over at Universal Studios. Despite, I think, that ride being designed with 3D in mind, it was never actually in 3D in Florida. And so a lot of the visuals, the characters in particular, just looked ridiculous because you had all this footage that was filmed with 3D in mind, now in 2D on these big screens. And basically what it amounted to was Vin Diesel hanging from a helicopter looking like he was, ironically enough, the size of King Kong. I mean, it's just utterly absurd. You didn't have that so much with Kong. Kong, Josh, no longer goes outside. Kong. So this was the case last year when I went, but I hoped it was a kind of a temporary thing. Seems like, no, they just don't take it outside anymore. It seems like it saves them a bit of money on having to maintain the trucks.
And probably the doors. They don't have to open the doors, right? So
the driver doesn't seem to really do anything. I mean, they talk. You still get the voiceover, but they don't seem to move or anything anymore. But the big change compared to last year for me was that the 3D is gone. So it's no longer in 3D. So it now has exactly the same problem that Fast and the Furious has on that front, where a lot of the visuals just look off. Like, it doesn't look convincing at all. So I did not enjoy that at all. And given that Fast and the Furious at least has, I guess, some like meme value, and everyone kind of goes on there knowing what they're getting in for, I now would, if you put a gun to my head and said, pay me my tip for my taxi, and said, which ride do you want to go on? I would say Fast and the Furious, Josh.
Well, there you go. Heard it here first.
Well, especially because just you know, in terms of going back to merch briefly, another new line of merch that they've got since the last year, almost what I would describe as like travel merch. They've got like stickers and shirts and hats and glasses and all sorts of other stuff with almost like travel sticker designs on them. So like visit Hogsmeade and, you know, visit Skull Island and whatever else on there. And yeah, one of them is Skull Island. So it's like, oh, you've made the King Kong ride kind of front and center of this new line of merch, and have simultaneously, you know, kneecapped this entire ride to a really depressing extent. So, yeah, it's kind of a bummer. Like, it feels like Kong is front and center of the park's image, maybe more than it has been since it opened. And it's like, just don't bother going on this ride, mate. I mean, I walked on it and felt like I'd wasted my time. You know, there were times where it was like an hour wait, and I was like, gosh, I feel sorry for the people in an hour-long wait for that. Not worth it. Anyway, there you go. That's a pretty aimless and ramble about my time in Florida. What's new? You going to any theme parks, Josh, so you can aimlessly ramble about them?
Nothing planned yet. Nothing planned. Obviously, gonna need to hit up Thorpe Park to go on Hyperia, the new coaster there. I still need to try out refreshed Nemesis at Alton Towers. Need to go on those. Voltron is open in Europa Park, so I feel like I need to go see that. So maybe I'll have a look, see if I can get out to Germany. I don't know.
Well, that's a more ambitious trip than I expected you to talk about. What for this year? I mean,
well, Tom, you know, Japan is no longer on the cards for us this year, so the world is my oyster, so to say.
Get yourself a cheap and cheerful flight and hotel package to Universal, like I did, Josh.
Cheap and cheerful.
Cheap and cheerful by
1,200 quid is
by Florida standards.
Yes, it's general.
Well, look, selfishly speaking, it's only 1,200 quid if you need to buy a Universal ticket. For someone like me, for smart guys like me, it would only be it would only be like 800. Yeah. Well, on that note, perhaps we should end the show.
Yeah, maybe.
thanks for listening. thanks for listening, and apologies both for our absence and for deciding to come back.
And the state of this podcast.
Will we be back next week? I don't know. I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Ours is on a postcard.
I had a good time in Florida. Thought, well, you know, talk about it for an hour or so, see if it's of use to anybody. If not, well, nothing's changed, has it? See you later, everybody. Take care.
See ya. Bye-bye.